His Turn When Thoughtseize. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Zach.
And this is episode 75, Bloodbraid Elf, Bloodbraid Elf, Bloodbraid Elf.
It's a lot of Bloodbraid Elves.
Well, if you've played any Modern recently, it's a lot of Bloodbraid Elves running around.
You are not wrong.
So, quick recap to our unbanned cast from 2 weeks ago now. We were not completely wrong. We were definitely wrong about Jace. And while I'm not happy to be wrong as sort of a state of being, I am glad that I was wrong in the sense that I thought Jace was going to be garbage fire. So if I have to be wrong, I'm glad that I'm wrong about something not being bad.
You mean bad, like as in bad for the format, right? Not like he's actually bad.
I mean, I think he kind of is bad, but not bad for the format. Yeah,
but what you were saying is that you thought he was going to be really bad for Modern, like in general, right?
Okay, yes, yeah. Absolutely. That was my long held belief.
Fair. Just wanted to clarify.
Yes, but as I said, I was wrong. So far, I still reserve the right to condemn him at a future time, possibly when somebody just figures out they can play Twinblade. Nobody's done that yet, so we're good.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's coming.
It could be, and I think I need to admit that, like, I was wrong too. I was saying that Jace was going to be better than Bloodbraid. I didn't quite have it to the level that you did, in the sense that, like, you thought Jace was going to be just, like, way too good for Modern. I didn't think he was going to be too good for Modern, but I thought he was going to be very good and much better than Bloodbraid Elf, and I feel like I was just way off on Bloodbraid Elf's power. I thought Bloodbraid Elf was going to be barely played, and yeah. Fast forward a couple weeks, and Bloodbraid Elf is everywhere. This card is in every deck all of a sudden.
Yeah, so this episode is pretty much just going to be us talking about all the decks that are playing Bloodbraid Elf right now. And so, yeah, strap in, because there is a lot of them. It's not just, like, this isn't going to be Jund cast, because that is, like, that's like level zero for that card, it turns out.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the first home, because honestly, Jund decks with Bloodbraid Elf existed, right? It was like, it's pretty easy to imagine what that deck looks like. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's the best home for this card. I think it's just like the home people knew about.
Sure.
But I don't know. I've been more impressed by some of the other lists, and I think the card's very, very good in some of those lists.
Yeah, I mean, it's like in Jund. Actually, hold on. We're getting ahead of ourselves. We did a giveaway last episode. We got a ton of submissions, which I was overwhelmed by. Really, like some of the decks that we got were hilarious. Some of them were quite good. I wanted to give an honorable mention to a couple of them, and then we can sort of swoop from there, because one of the honorable mentions is actually one of the decks that I really want to talk about for Bloodbraid. But first honorable mention, the old 8-Ball. So Magic Online user, or I don't know if this is a Magic Online name, but Megalomu sent us a Bloodbraid Elf, Vengevine, Ball Lightning, Groundbreaker deck.
This deck is sick. I love this deck.
And so it's basically haste to dot deck. Hellspark, Ball Lightning, Groundbreaker, Hell's Thunder.
It even has Vengevine. It has this sweet, like, reanimator feel too, where it's got Vengevine, Hell's Thunder, and Hellspark Elemental in Faithless yep. Looting. So that's pretty cool.
I played when Collected Company first came out, I put together a deck like this, and it was fun, but wildly inconsistent, which was part of its charm, right? Like every once in a while you would just like 15 somebody, and sometimes somebody would just like duress your collected company, and then you would be very sad.
Sure.
So, but anyway, so a bunch of haste threats, a bunch of sweet cards, like Ball Lightning is a very big nostalgia card for me, because when I started playing, Ball Lightning had just come out and people were like, this is the most ridiculous card ever. Like Ball Lightning was it was something that people hadn't seen before. Like six power was just like mind blowing. The art was sweet. Like the original art from the dark, because you know, old, just Quentin Hoover, RIP. So I really like Ball Lightning. If you can put Ball Lightning in a deck, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, I mean, the deck looks sweet. The card is sweet. I think the list, one of the problems I had with it was that it looks very unrefined. I think it's more of a theory deck, because to me it feels like this deck, one, Cathartic Reunion of Bloodburied Elf deck doesn't seem very good to me.
Yeah, that's a rough hit. It's like it has a good number of threes, and like even Hellspark Elemental is like a decent hit, because then you get in for six with Elf and Elemental. But yeah, some of the other hits are not as good. Yeah, Reunion, Lightning Axe.
Yeah,
is
I think that one's not great, but it is acceptable. Yeah. It's not great. Having additional costs in your Bloodbraid Elf deck is pretty bad. You can avoid that. But
yeah.
The thing I wanted to see more of is mana acceleration. And we'll get to why that is, but I think that's where this deck kinda is a little lacking, is that it's playing so many threes and no Birds of Paradise, I guess. So
yeah, I mean you need more ways to trigger Vengevine.
Sure.
With one drops that aren't like Bloodbraid Elf into a three drop will trigger Vengevine, which or Bloodbraid Elf into a creature will trigger Vengevine, which is great. But if that's not happening for some reason, the deck gets a lot less reliable.
Yep.
So having a few more one drops, would be like, even if you just went like four birds.
Look, I will shout out though, he put three boil in the sideboard, and that is dedication to beating blue. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. I tell you, I would probably boiled if I was playing against him, but you know, yes. What? It used to like feel so unfair when I got boiled and choked, and now it's like if I'm playing a blue deck and I get boiled, it's just like good on you, man. Like this has to be great.
It's, well, it's your own fault. It's your own fault for playing islands.
Yeah, no, I deserve it. And it's just like, yeah, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. It's just one of those cards where it's just so, it's such a beating, and it happens so infrequently now that it's just like,
it's ridiculous. It's
like, congratulations, man. Just like, enjoy this.
Yep. It happened. And hey, you can pick up Invocation Boils for like $12.
Oh, that's what's so up.
Go grab some Invocation Boils. Cause they're actually pretty sweet.
Yeah. So what other Bloodbraid submissions did we get?
All right, so we got a green red Eldrazi Bloodbraid, which was like the runner up, and there's a lot to love in this deck.
Yeah, we got this one a few times, right? This came in from
this was actually one of the more common submissions. Like, in, you know, obviously the numbers, some of the numbers vary, but it's basically Bloodbraid, Matter Reshaper, Reality Smasher, Thought Not Seer, and then Talisman of Impulse. And the real workhorses, or the real workhorse, is Eldrazi Obligator. And this was a card that actually saw, this was part of the like Eldrazi Winter winning deck, I believe.
This card has won a Pro Tour.
Yeah, so Eldrazi Obligator as a three power haste creature is already something. It has basically kicker, one colorless, one and a colorless, to gain control of target creature and opponent controls. It's like, what's that card? It's a treachery. Treason?
Act of treason.
Like the, yeah, there's a bunch of effects. I don't remember what the original card was called, but this effect gets reprinted very commonly. And usually doesn't see a ton of play. Like Zealous Conscripts used to see some play in old Jund decks.
I mean, that one saw more just for the fact that it comboed with Kiki Jiki, right?
Sure. So, but I wouldn't.
I mean, that effect is powerful.
Somebody that's been playing Modern.
I was going to say that the treachery effect is a very powerful effect. There are so many times where the card, like, the text box is either, like, do nothing or, like, do some amount of damage or win the game. And it's right. Like, you don't want to play it because it's so split, but when it comes free on another card, like, the when it is win the game, it's just so good that you want it, you know?
Yes. I once donated $5 to Todd Stevens' stream because he, like, whatever the act of treason from, like, Oath? I don't remember if it was Eldrazi Obligator specifically, but he stole somebody's Ulamog. Oh, and awesome. And beat them down with it. I was like, here's $5, man. I was like, if you do this, I'll give you $5. And a bunch of people in the stream like donated because of it. It was pretty sweet.
Yeah, that is sweet. But let's we got a bunch of this and we're gonna talk about it later, so let's go past this deck. This one will be back.
Yes, we will come back to this. So the winner that we chose is Johnny Schmidt. There's no username or anything like that. So that's just the world. And so he put together a four color teamer. So like teamer black, I guess, 23 lands, four Bloodbraid, two Courser, two Ewit, three Lotus Cobra, three Savage Knuckleblade, two Scavenging Ooze, four Tarmogoyf, two Tireless Tracker, four Serum Visions, one Dreadbore, two Chandra Torture Defiance, Abrupt Decay, 2K Command, four Bolts, one Terminate, Sideboard, three Destructive Revelry, two Fatal Push, two Fulminator Mage, three Izzet Charm, one Izzet Staticaster, two Nissa Voices Indikar, two Jace the Mind Sculptor. This deck is very exciting to me.
Yeah, I know you love it. I think it's like kind of right up your alley with the Lotus Cobra going on. It's got
like,
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say just like it does all the things. Like it literally does all the things.
It does. I mean,
I don't know if there's another way to like describe how ridiculous, you know, like some of these hits, like Lotus Cobra aside, obviously a card that I have a lot of affection for. But just like as a Tarmogoyf deck, it's great. Like it has so many card types, which I think is something that a lot of people, when they are building Tarmogoyf decks, don't always focus on. Like if you're satisfied to play a 2-mana 3/4 or a 2-mana 4/5, like that's fine. I'm in for like 2-mana 6/7. Like that's what I want to see if I'm going to put a Tarmogoyf on the board. Sure. And this deck definitely does that.
Yeah, I think it used to be that 2-mana 4/5 was good enough in Modern, and now it's like if your Tarmogoyf's not a 5/6, like it's not good enough.
It needs a block of reality.
Yeah, it definitely needs a block smasher, and it needs a block Gurmagangler.
Yeah. So this, yeah.
I mean, Abrupt Decay, getting Terminate, getting Kolaghan's Command in your Bloodbraid decks, that's great. I mean, those are the cards you want to hit with Jund, but he manages to also get, you know, Savage Knuckleblade. And the thing I like about this deck is, to me, it looks a little rough. Like, it's clearly not, you know, like 100% tuned tier 1 deck, but like decks, like outside of the red green Eldrazi and Jund, none of the lists we got were. And this one looks like it's going a different way. And it's an interesting thing to explore with with this deck is like explosive mana, which he's doing very well with the mana dorks. Very large creatures that hit hard in Tarmogoyf and Savage Knuckleblade. And value with Bloodbraid. I mean, it kind of is doing everything that the card Bloodbraid Elf wants to do. You know, where it's a gold card, it's got a bunch of colors, it's hasty with you know, relevant bodies, it's got value. Like I think this deck is sweet, and I'm actually gonna sleeve it up on Tuesday for my local mod. I'm pretty excited for it.
Nice. So Johnny, you will receive the set of Bloodbraid Elves. I am like horrendously behind in mailing stuff out. It's just like a IRL ridiculously busy recently. Like I know Zach's been super busy too. So, if we owe you stuff, it is coming. I will commit to getting it out, as soon as humanly possible. Actually probably sooner, because humanly possible was probably a little while ago.
That's fair.
So I apologize for that, and I will do my very best to get the stuff out as soon as I can.
But we're gonna shoot John or Johnny, however he goes by, an email, get the contact information, we'll get that out to him. We're also gonna include a signed SCG Doomsday playmat, so you know,
all the stuff.
I think that one was pretty topical, just because, you know, last episode was Jace Doomsday, and then, you know, Bloodbraid Elf was the savior. So I like the playmat.
and then Bloodbraid Elf turned out to be like the dominator.
Yeah, right. So we'll get that out to him. Yeah, man. Congrats. Probably be doing more of these. These are a lot of fun. Looking through the list was awesome. And really, shout out to everybody that, you know, sent a list in. It really is cool to see, you know, the different takes everybody had on the card. That was, that was one of my favorite. This has been in the pre-episode part where we're, like, talking about the episode, this has been one of my favorite episodes that I've done on the cast so far, just getting to see everything that everybody brewed up. It was really sweet.
Yes. Okay, so let us now get back into it. Bloodbraids. All right. So where does this card go? Like I said, I think the level zero is Jund. It was an existing deck. I think for me, the real power of Bloodbraid in this deck is that it gives a dedicated attrition deck, a 2-for-1 that's upside on your end instead of downside on your opponent's end. And if that makes sense.
Yes. It accumulates resources for you in Jund, which is something that the deck has been lacking recently. It's more been a resource denial deck, right? And it has had trouble, like outside of Dark Confidant, nothing in the deck accumulates resources. I guess Kolaghan's Command kind of, but mostly it was, you know, kill your stuff, take stuff out of your hand, put a clock on the table. Right. And Bloodbraid Elf does this very well in the sense that, like, it accumulates resources, but it also puts a clock on the table. So, like, something we learned from Shadow recently, like, one of the big lessons from Shadow dominating Modern was Thoughtseize and Inquisition and Collective Brutality, all these discard spells, they're very good in the format, they're very powerful, they do what you want to do in games of Magic very well, but they don't really work at all without a big clock. And as we saw, there's a long time where, you know, Jund, Abzan, classic Thoughtseize into Goyf decks, the clock just wasn't fast enough anymore. It was just losing to the more streamlined, powerful decks. And then all of a sudden they put out Death Shadow, and it was just like, oh, so I can play a Thoughtseize and cast a 1-mana 7/7? Well, it turns out that clock is fast enough.
Yeah.
Right? So
Yeah, especially if you're like, oh yeah, also BTW's Battle Rage.
Exactly. Wrecked. And so it was like the lesson from the Shadow decks was that, you know, you had to speed up your clock. Like, you still want to play, like, there are definitely a subset of decks in Modern that are very interested in Thoughtseize, Inquisition, you know, discard, but they just needed a faster clock than they had, and Bloodbraid Elf just adds to it, you know?
Yeah. So a lot of these lists are, look very similar. You know, you want to curve out, and you definitely want to lead with discard. So you're looking at Thoughtseize or Inquisition. Like, the numbers are lower because they're really crummy Bloodbraid hits, but ideally you're still going to go Inquisition into Dark Confidant, into Liliana, and then Bloodbraid into your Wincon and just
get them.
And that happens, right? And Raging Ravine is probably, I think there was a time when Raging Ravine was like a mandatory four of, because the card itself represents so much damage and so much utility. Just, you know, it does everything, right? Like, it's color fixing. It's an insanely fast clock. It's used to be harder to interact with before Fatal Push, but still good, right? Like, once your opponent is in top deck mode, Raging Ravine is pretty
it pairs over. So well with Liliana of the Veil. It's like, you can't kill it with removal, and then Liliana makes them discard all the removal, and now you have a big creature that they can't deal with, right?
Yep. And with other decks pushing Tron kind of like down, Jund automatically gets a lot better, because that's their, like, they're 50% against everything, you know, is sort of the classic take. And then they're like 15% against Tron. So anytime Tron is bad, like, Jund is automatically better. And then when they also have this nutty card on top of that, like, it's a perfect storm, a recipe for things being very, very good.
Absolutely.
And also, like, Colgan's Command too is such an upgrade from Lightning. Like, much as it pains me, because I haven't done it yet, but I will Bloodbraid Elf into Lightning just for, like, posterity's sake, because it is a really, 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 like, insane backbreaker. But just had the value proposition of Colgan's Command is just so much higher.
Well,
you know, like, you killed my first Bloodbraid Elf, I cast my second one, cascade into Colgan's Command, get my first one back, and play it again. Like,
yeah, that's ridiculous. That's too much value.
It's right. It way is too much value. Like Jund, the attrition version of Jund was already really good. The, like, value attrition version, I think, is undeniably tier one, and definitely, like, if you were going to a completely open field where you're just like, okay, like, I don't care that I'm going to play a known quantity, the cards are so good that, like, I can overcome that with practice and play, which is true. You know, this is now, like, the default.
Yeah, it's sweet. I mean, I'm with you. I have to say, too, like, I thought Jund was going to get so much worse with Jace being legal, right? Whereas, like, you actually are this attrition plan, and it just hasn't. It's kind of shocking. In fact, Jund is just way better, and Jace just, you know, isn't there, which I think partly is helping the deck. But I played a Jace deck on Tuesday. I was just playing a local Modern. I played against another very good player at my store. I was playing Bloodbraid Jund, and I was playing Jeskai with Jace, and I got smashed, man. I thought I was playing, you know, I played well, you know, did what my deck wanted to do, and just got ground out by Bloodbraid Elves, which was shocking. Like, I thought Jace would be able to keep up, but Jace could not. So,
yep. Yeah. And I also, I do think that there's a level of response that is required, because certainly, like, unchecked Jace in the format would definitely lead to him dominating. I think people are calming down a little bit. Like, when he first came out on Magic Online, it was like, if you cast a Jace, that's great. I'm going to boil you next turn. Like, you tap out for Jace and then I boil you in response. Like, that was a thing that happened a lot.
Yeah. I mean, there was, like, the overreaction phase too, right? But even past that, like, now we're here to a spot where, like, people are realizing, whoa, Bloodbraid just is better right now. So, like, maybe let's focus a little less on blue, a little more on Gruul. if you will. But
yeah,
even through that, it's just like Jace is just not as good as it seems like he would be. Like, it really is a thing that, you know, you're playing a Jace deck and then they cast a Karn like before you play your Jace and you're like, what am I gonna do? Like, I can't. Do I play this right. Jace and just like it gets exiled and he's not even down a card? I guess I brainstormed, but I'm never coming back. Like, he already has Tron online. Like, that's tough. And then there's still the fast decks. Like, Jace is not very good against Affinity, so.
Nope. So that's the.
That's where Jund's in, right?
That's the sort of state of Jund. And obviously, like, there is room. There's certainly room for it to be, like, customized. Like, there are choices in here, like, where I personally would make different choices, but not many. You know, the sideboard, like, having access to green is always a solid sideboard plan. Like, green and white probably being the most widely applicable, but there's a lot of overlap into green. And for this deck in particular, which is already, like, answers.deck, just having more answers in the side is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it gets Maelstrom Pulse, it gets Abrupt Decay, it has these answers to everything type permanents, it gets Hand Disruption. I want to see more, like, I think because of how popular Jund is right now, and I think it's quickly becoming, like, the most played deck in Modern, I want to see them start refining the mana base. I don't love the mana base right now, and I think one of the natural reactions is going to be, you know, they're going to start spreading Seas. There's going to be Field of Ruins, just attacking this deck's mana base. And historically, that has been one of the best ways to deal with Jund. And this deck's mana base is particularly vulnerable to it. Like, I think the fact, like, that a lot of lists weren't playing Mountain was just, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Like, it's something that they went to four basics. And this is something that's, like, it seems so trivial, but it's, like, it is been hotly debated, and I know, like, Jadeen Klomperens, now premium writer at Star City Games, friend of the show, she was mad when I said we should cancel the Pro Tour, so I don't know if she's friend of the show, but she's friend. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Oh, she was super mad when I put that article out on Hipsters. I was like, hey, blah, 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 blah. She's like, why do you want to cancel the Pro Tour? And I'm like, first of all, I can't cancel the Pro Tour. Did you read the article? And she was like, no, I saw the headline and I didn't want to read it. And I was like, okay. So we talked out, we hugged it out. Everything's fine now. But there's a real debate to, do I play this basic Mountain? Because there's a non-zero number of times where having that Mountain in your opening hand is just going to completely wreck you. And, like, cause they're playing Twilight Mire and not, Graven Cairns. So you need to hit double black sometimes pretty early in the game. Like, you basically have to have double black on turn three, but you also need green. So it's a real sketchy proposition because sometimes you're going to have to keep a hand that's like fetch land, Mountain, Bob, Liliana, because it's great. But if you don't draw another land that taps for black, you're in really rough shape because you're basically, there's going to be a scenario where you just end up time walking yourself because you can't hit the double black. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, it's a real color cost to play it. Like, the Mountain used to be horrible in the deck. It used to just be, like, Jund for a long time was just a black-green deck splashing Terminate and Bolt. And that was it. Every card in the deck was black and green. Except those two cards, and I guess some sideboard cards. But for the most part, it was just a black-green deck. And so Mountain did almost nothing, and it was like, you should, like, the reason most decks play basics is Blood Moon. Blood Moon, having a Mountain doesn't help with that. You're going to have a lot of Mountains when someone plays a Blood Moon. So they didn't play it.
Yes, too exactly. Many Mountains.
You have more Mountains than you know what to do with. But so they didn't play the Mountain back then. It didn't make sense. But that is an old modern format that's like a relic of past formats that people, you know, just kind of continued because they haven't really looked at it since. But in a format now where the predominant land hate is Field of Ruin, like that's the most common one you're going to see right now. You yep. want to be able to fix red, especially when you have, you know, now you're playing Bloodbraid Elves. Now you're playing Kolaghan's Commands. You still have Bolts. You still have Terminates. Now there are the sideboard cards. And honestly, like not being able to cast your Bloodbraid Elf is inexcusable for this deck. Like if you,
right.
if you're sitting with two Bloodbraids in hand because your Blackleave Cliffs or whatever got Field of Ruined and you just couldn't get a mountain, that's horrible. That's, you know, and it's your fault for not playing the mountain, right?
Yeah. So you need to, now that your plan, at least in theory, is like curve out to four, to like 25 lands, I think is fine. Tireless Tracker helps with that. Like it doesn't feel bad to play 25 lands when every other land you play draws you a card.
Well, especially
or like every land, especially you play,
when some of the lands are Treetop Village and Raging Ravine. It's like it's fine. Sure. If you want to go to 25, go for it.
But you have to have that consistency. Like if you start missing land drops, which you really shouldn't. I mean, 25 lands. If you're missing land drops, then I don't know. You're not shuffling your deck well enough. But you know, you gotta stick to the script. So it should work 90% of the time, right? Like 60% of the time, it works every time. It's more reliable than that. Yep. But the mountain. So they're at four basics now. Basically, is what is the ultimate point is one forest, one mountain, two swamps, and it doesn't really have anything to do with Blood Moon. It has everything to do with Field of Ruin. Flip side, they can't play Field of Ruin. They can't play Ghost Quarter. So
I think, you know, this deck could play like a Field of Ruin just because it fixes them. But I don't think they're in the market.
But there's no. But I mean, how do you even? Because then you're essentially a four color deck. You're adding.
Well, it fixes
even
like
one, more of those hands.
Once where you like, have
it, well, it fixes for three mana.
It does. I mean, it's not great. Like the fact that they're not playing Fatal Push either makes me even less excited to play it. So, and, like, I think they're right not to play it. But like, if the metagame was like 40% Tron and just like Valakut, just all of these types of just like big mana decks, like I think this deck's mana base could put Field of Ruin into it. Especially like at 25 land, like at 25, I think you can, like as the 25th land. But at the same time, like right now, I don't think it's worth it. I wouldn't do it.
How bad does Mountain, Field of Ruin in your opener feel?
Well, you like, mulligan that, but like the argument is like if you were going to play a 24 land deck and you wanted like a main deck land hate spell, like instead of playing a Fulminator, you could play your 25th land and make it a Field of Ruin and not be too punished because like the hand, like the hands that you have a Field of Ruin and the mana is bad, like to where you have to mulligan, like you would have mulligan anyway because you just wouldn't have had enough lands in the hand to begin with. So like it doesn't cost you in that sense, but like I like the way it's built now with like 25 lands much better. Like I wouldn't do that right now. I'm just saying like I think you could play like a Field of Ruin if you like playing like a local metagame where you just know like half of your store plays Tron for whatever reason, like sure. You know, I don't think it's inexcusable.
In that dystopian hell, yeah. Where like
everybody's on Tron. Tron.
Yeah. And then you just play Infect and you just rack up that store.
Yeah, you should probably just be, yeah, that's fair. You should just be playing Infect at that point. But like if you really love Jund and half your store played Tron, like you could get that Field of Ruin in there. It's tough, right?
Yeah, I'm more into Fulminator Mage.
Well, Fulminator Mage is much better because you're already a resource denial deck and you can cascade into it, which just seems very good.
Yep. Yes, strong agree. All right, so moving on to my current least favorite deck. Well,
you were talking about cascading into Fulminator.
Yes. So like cascading into Fulminator like still feels like real magic to me. Cascading into Stone Rain is...
Well, that's the best kind of magic.
God. The one thing I will... Okay, so Ponza was previously had not been a real deck. I don't care what anybody says. Just like, love it, hate it, whatever. The reality is, like, It was a gacha deck that occasionally would like spike a tournament because the people there were all happened to be playing decks that this deck gets.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it was, right? Where it's like, it is a real deck in the sense that like, it is a deck you could decide to play at a modern event and not like, and not feel horrible about the decision. Like, I wouldn't say it was a good decision always, but it is a metagame call where it has very polarized matchups where some of its matchups are you're like 10% to win, and then there are other matchups where it's like you're 90%. Right?
Right.
It's like if you bring red green Ponza and half your store is playing Tron, well, you're probably gonna be in for a fun event.
Sure. So this a 5-0 list. Chandra, 4 Arbor Elf, 2 Birds, 4 Bloodbraid Elf, Courser, Inferno Titan, Storm Breath, 2 Tireless Tracker, 3 Molten Rain, 3 Acid Moss. Ugh, that's a stupid card. Like, I mean, I get it. It's cool, but it's also sure. Terrible. And then 4 Stone Rain because, man, you want to blow up a land. Stone Rain is the way to do it. Easy to cast, cascade into it, blows up any land. It doesn't have the Molten Rain restriction, that pesky Molten Rain restriction. 2 Bolts, 4 Blood Moon, which seems super aggressive. 4 Utopia Sprawl, which is fine. And 22 lands, lots of fetches. Because they're ramping, they can get away with playing stuff like Witchbane Orb out of the side. So
historically, I've played against this deck at a number of SCGs, actually. And I've played against it with a variety of decks. I've played against it with Jeskai. I've played against it with Death Shadow. In fact, I had a win in against this deck for day 2 of... I think it was the Open that was in the Invitational in June. I was playing against Ponza with Death Shadow. I think I played against it with another deck, too. Black green, maybe? I don't remember, but the point is I've played against it a number of times with a variety of different decks, and the problem with the deck has always been that it just had no clock. Like, you would Stone Rain them, you'd Stone Rain them, and then, like, you'd cast, like, a 6-drop, and if they just dealt with your 6-drop, your deck had, like, 2 Birds of Paradise, an Arbor Elf, and, like, I had 2 lands in play, but it's like, I Path Exiled your Inferno Titan, you did 3 damage to me, and you got a land. Like, congratulations, you know? And so it just never really did what you wanted to do. Like, it could get ahead, but it didn't close out games. And then it didn't have a good win con. Like, there wasn't a good win con at, like, the 3-4 mana spot, which is exactly where this deck wants to be because it's playing these elves and these Utopia Sprawls. And, like, it even had Planeswalkers. Like, it would play Garrick sometimes, and it was doing all this stuff, but it just... it just didn't have the right win condition. And Bloodbraid Elf is exactly what this deck wanted. It was a win condition that also Stone Rained them, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess Garrick Wildspeaker, I'm not totally against that. I still think if you're going to play Garrick Wildspeaker, you're going to play Deathcloud. Or my glorious variant, Torment of Hailfire Deathcloud. Did you see my posting around?
I did.
Wonderful monstrosity.
That's a good word for it. It's a monstrosity.
It's, I mean, I have all the cards.
Fair.
Is all I'm saying.
You can play it. Right? You can, like, leave it up for an FNM and have fun.
And, like, Torment of Hailfire is so good. I
think you need to be Tronning with that card, man.
I do too. I mean, like, Mono Black Tron, and I've been gotten by that deck online. I have a soft spot for Mono Black Tron because, well, I know. You know, it's
like
weird.
You hate Tron, but if they put swamps in it, then you're okay with it?
I'm pretty okay with it. Well, also, like, there's so many... I will say this for Mono Black Tron. Their... versus, like, Blue Tron. Their combo kill, quote-unquote, is slightly more durable than... Mindslaver, because it doesn't involve the graveyard.
That's fair. It's a fair point.
So, like, if you get to 13 mana, which is not unreasonable, you can Panoptic Mirror, exiling Worst Fears, And then you can take all the turns and then you win.
Yeah. I don't know why we're not just Emrakul. You know, like, you're already at 13. Let's just play that extra Tron land at 15. But, you know, whatever. It's fine.
Because it's not That's fun. Fair. And it's also not, I mean, it's an auto win, but it's not always an auto win.
That's fair.
Like, if you're playing against Lantern or playing against like Ensnaring Bridge burn deck or something like that, Emrakul is just a waste. Like, you take your one extra turn, you do nothing. Like, it's the worst version of taking turns.
Well, yeah, but then where, you just like, cast your Torment of Hailfire, and what are they going to do now? Like, they got to sack the bridge, or they're going to die to the damage.
Sure. Yeah. see, my plan is coming together. But anyways, getting back to
relevant Blood Raid decks.
Yeah, so Blood Raid decks. The thing I will say about this deck is it is at least somewhat easy to interact with, because if they go Forest Arbor Elf and you kill their Arbor Elf, there's a good chance that they just do nothing for two turns.
No, that is valid. And that's a real concern with the deck, is that it has the mana dork problem, right? Where it's like a deck that's built around 3 and 4 drops and 1 drops. And it's like, if you answer the 1 drop, then they just don't even have a turn 2 a lot of the time. Which is an issue. It's definitely an issue.
And there's a guy at my store that plays this deck, and like, it's whatever. But I mean, that's what I talked to him. Aside from giving him a hard time for playing the deck, you know, when we have serious discussions about it, I'm like, okay, what happens if I fatal push your Arbor Elf? And he's like, most of the time I just lose.
Yep.
And I'm like, okay, well, I was like, is that really what you want to be doing in Modern? And he's like, yeah, sometimes. He's like, I just get to Inferno Titan people. I'm like, okay, it's valid.
No, it's fair.
I get, like, I understand that feeling where you're just like, want to Timmy them out, and you're like, okay, bang, Inferno Titan, do something. And, you know, as long as they don't have a Path to Exile, you're in pretty good shape. If they do have a Path to Exile, then you're a sad panda,
doing a little less.
You know?
But hey, one other thing I wanted to point out in this deck specifically about Bloodbraid Elf was that I have noticed in the past that the deck was like really bad against the card Disdainful Stroke. It's like they could always like keep you off getting a bunch of mana, but they couldn't really like they never put you down to like zero generally. Like, you'd always be sitting with like 1, 2, or 3 lands. Like, you never got up to Colonnade mana in your blue decks, but they generally like didn't just have you completely no board. So you always had like a stroke up, and it was like, yeah, if you just like stroke their like Stormbreath Dragon or their Inferno Titan or whatever, then they're not really doing anything, they lose. But Bloodbraid Elf being a cast trigger is so relevant. It's like, it's a real problem for them, you know? It's like, well, what part of this do you want to counter? And you're definitely not stroking the part they cascade into, so you're probably countering the Bloodbraid, I guess, but it makes the deck a lot less weak to that. And then one other card I wanted to point out that I think is absurdly well positioned right now, specifically, is the card Obstinate Baloth.
Yeah.
This deck has 2 in the sideboard. I would not hate 3. I wouldn't hate 4, even. Like, if you wanted to go 4 Obstinate Baloth right now, I think it's a great place to be. There's a lot of burn going on, and there's a lot of Liliana the Veils. Lightning Bolt's coming back. There are Hollow One decks that are playing freaking Burning Inquiry. They just get you, you know, randomly discard an Obstinate Baloth out of your hand. I think that card's great right now. It blocks Bloodbraid Elf. It just eats it. They can't even attack with it. And when the 3/2 on Bloodbraid Elf does nothing, then the card isn't actually that great. It's just a 4-mana way to cast like a 3 or a 2 drop or whatever. So,
right.
It's
an overcosted
exactly. 3 drop. So I want to see the number of Obstinate Baloths go up. I think that card's great right now.
Okay, hear me out. Dodecapod.
I'm listening.
So Dodecapod is the card that had the original templating for this.
The first one, right?
It had to have been, because that card is ancient.
It was like some Stronghold. Oh, no.
Sounds like a...
No, the first one with this template, well, kind of templating. The first one with it was Guerrilla Tactics, I think. From
That could be.
I think that was Alliances. But that was a different, that was different. That was
That's a different world.
I mean, that was a spell. This is a creature that goes into play, right?
Yep, Guerrilla Tactics.
That was the first if this got discarded spell. This was like their kind of initial response to Hymn to Turok.
Sure. Strange, but... Yep. So it's a 2-mana shock if you discard it, and I want to say that this is like legal somewhere. Like this feels like it's been reprinted. Yeah, it did. It was in Ravnica. It was in 10th.
Okay.
It was in 9th, 8th.
Sure. So you could play this in modern.
It is legal. There you go.
Maybe this is
you can play
your burn tech, dude. For Hollow One, you got to beat Hollow One somehow. Burn.
Unlikely. It is a clean answer to Liliana, though. So that's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a clean answer to Lily, but it also can just four their face when Lily pluses. So I don't know. It's a playable Magic card. It definitely is still playable in Modern.
Yep. Oh man. Oh, it multiple arts. This is one of the old.
I mean, you gotta play the Alliances art. It just looks so good. Oh, there's multiple arts in Alliances.
There's two. Yeah, there's two Alliances arts.
I'll play the one with the mountain. There's one of people falling down the mountain.
A guy falling down a mountain, or a knight looking at a tripwire.
No, dude, the mountain one. That's what's up. It's a red deck. You gotta play the mountain one. Come on.
Sure. Yep. All right. Anyways, so Guerrilla Tactics exist, but so Dodecapod is a 4-mana 3/3 from Apocalypse, and it is an artifact, which is not zero relevance. If a spell or ability your opponent controls, blah blah blah, instead put into play with 2+1/+1 counters. So you, instead of getting a free 4/4 that gains you 4 life, you get a free 5/5 that does nothing.
Yeah. I think I'd rather have the, I mean, the 5/5 is nice. It lines up against Smasher, it lines up against Gurmag Angler, but like the decks that are playing those cards aren't generally going to discard that. I don't know. I like Obstinate Baleth because it has the carryover against Burn. It kind of hoses Eidolon.
I'm not actually suggesting, unless you're just like refuse to have.
I mean, like you could play Dodeca. Like, I don't think it's like, if there's just so much Jund around you, like, I don't think it's ridiculous to play this Dodecapod card in like a blue white deck, maybe. It's probably not great, sure. But like it is something you could do. You could like play it in Tron, maybe.
It beats Hollow One.
It is good against Hollow One.
Like
it's
that, good against Hollow One. That is interesting to me at the very least.
It is good there.
Because post board, your opponent's going to go Copperline Gorge, Burning Inquiry, and then they're going to play their free 4-drop, and then you're going to play your free 5-drop or a 5-power creature, and then you're just going to be like, what now? Go ahead, attack with them. See what happens.
Yeah.
So, very, very tangentially relevant.
Just on that note, too, I will say Wiltleaf Liege is well-positioned, too. I mean, it's the same thing, but that's a sweet card you can play right now.
I love Wiltleaf Liege. One of my friends plays, he's a sort of a dedicated Abzaner. He was like, what should I play? And I was like, play Wiltleaf Liege. Like, I don't know if you play Loxodon Smiter, but like if you're going to play green white X, I think you could definitely do worse than like little kid Jund or little kid Abzan.
Little kid Abzan destroys Jund right now. So if you wanted to play that, it would be a good call.
But also like a Jundy, like Jund Splash White for Lingering Souls also beats Jund. So
I'm not convinced that it does anymore. It used to for sure. I'm not convinced it does anymore because the mana is fragile and they're playing Fulminators. It might. It might. But
then you have your own Fulminator, right? Like you have all their good stuff.
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to.
And then extra
like,
good stuff.
They're only
on top
three colors, so it's harder to mana screw them. Like when you're playing white, you can get mana screwed. But I don't know. It might win. It might be good enough. And the other thing, too, is like Lingering Souls isn't as big a trump in black green mirrors anymore now that Liliana the Last Hope's so widely adopted.
Sure.
But whatever. Let's move on. We've talked enough Jund and Ponza.
Yes. For that matter. And Ponza. Yes. Which is still basically a Jund deck.
It's Jund for the Jund players that hate Tron.
Who hate Tron even more. All right. So humans, and this is another thing that I apparently am wrong about and happy to be wrong. Which is, I said humans was pretty beat, and like between people playing like main deck Sweltering Suns, people playing like Blood Moon and Spreading Seas, and like all the land hate that I was anticipating just really hits this deck hard. But it turns out if you put three Bloodbraid Elves in your humans deck for reasons, everything is great.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, Bloodbraid Elf is not a human, but you can only cascade into humans, so it's always going to give you that human trigger.
Right. So it functions as, you know, it's basically more collected companies. So this, the version, the username SAI_2001 5-0'd with a humans list that was collected company instead of Aether Vial, which I think is a valid choice, and three Bloodbraid Elf instead of, looks like they just shaved a couple of, they shaved a Thalia and a Meddling Mage and a Freebooter, looks like, to fit them.
Parish too. He's only playing three of those for whatever reason. That seems strange to me, but you got to fit Essence Pilgrim in there too, so.
If you're like Bloodbraid Elf into Mantis Rider, like, do you really care about Champion of the Parish all the time?
No, probably fine. No, I think this deck looks sweet. Like, it's a way to make humans grindier than it was. I think it's 100% a viable response to the metagame shifts. And I think humans as a deck and like kind of core to a deck is still a good place to be. I think it's still a powerful deck. It is doing powerful things. It was just kind of very easy to outgrind it. And adding grindy elements to the deck that are just human-based, because Collected Company and Bloodbraid Elf are essentially just more humans, right? In the sense that they just give you humans.
I mean, and you still, like, they were already playing Selfless Spirit out of the side, which I think is definitely correct. I honestly don't hate having it in the main deck, personally. Like, I wouldn't say no to, like, one in the main and then another one on the side. Because, I mean, you're going to get wrecked sometimes. Like, somebody's just going to go, whatever, Sweltering Suns, kill you. Other than that, I mean, it's just, right, just value. Like, that Bloodbraid into Mantis Rider, ridiculous. Bloodbraid into Reflector Mage,
also ridiculous.
Also ridiculous. You know, just, there's so many good, I mean, hell, Bloodbraid into Kessig Malcontents.
That's sweet. Like, Thalia's Lieutenant's a great hit. Like, I think this is a sweet home for it.
Yep. Not much else has changed. The nice thing is they diversified the mana base a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, you got to figure out the mana.
It's still very heavy on non-basics, and they're playing three mana confluence, which is tough. Tuffy McTufferson. But I mean, it is what it is. They're up to 21 lands, which I think does make it more reliable and a little bit more, like, less likely that they will just get, you know, functionally wastelanded out of the game by, like, anybody who's running Ghost Quarters.
Well, the nice thing, too, is they get two basics in here, which, yeah. Yep. I think you just said that.
So, yeah, I think it's, I mean, clearly it did well, right? It 5-0'd, so.
Look, something. I mean, what it really shows is that, like, the decks that were in this format before are not dead. You just have to adjust them. Like, if you were playing a deck and you were scared that your deck doesn't work anymore, it's like, hey, you know, just put a Bloodbraid Elf in it and it's good again. Yeah.
Speaking of decks that you can just, like, throw a Bloodbraid Elf in and apparently it works. A Magic Online user, Gordy12791, played this pile of Modern Legal Magic cards. Four Jace, already great. Four Saheeli Rai, also like another obnoxious card. Four Birds, three Bloodbraid Elf, four Coiling Oracle, four Eternal Witness, four Felidar Guardian, four Noble Hierarch, four Fiery Justice, four Oath of Nyssa, 21 lands, sideboard, another Bloodbraid Elf, four Renegade Rallier, two Avalanche Riders, because why not? Four Scavenging Ooze and four Spreading Seas. Tight.
It's a lot, right? Of four ofs.
Tight.
You don't tight usually see sideboard. Sideboard's that small.
Right.
It's a sweet list, though.
But
that's cool.
Right, so it's like ramp, ramp, ramp.
I mean, he is in for comboing. That's what he wants to do.
Right, and that's where the Fiery Justice comes in, right? It's like, you don't care if your opponent gains five life because you're just going to combo them out. Yeah. And that's why, like, Fiery Justice was an old mirror breaker in, like, Kiki Pod. And it's not a mirror breaker here, but it is a very efficient spell. Like, three mana, kill a bunch of stuff.
It's nice that it's, like, always going to kill Jace. And it can answer, yes, Bloodbraid, yep, decently well. If they, like, Bloodbraid into, like, a 3-3, you can kill both of them, right?
Mm-hmm. So, like, this is not a deck that I would play. If I had four Jace the Mind Sculptors already, and I was interested in playing, like, worse Twin, I guess you could play,
I mean, this might be better Twin. Like, this is, like, this is new age, like, Kiki Cord, right? Like, this feels like a Kiki Cord deck that's been updated for current modern, I guess. But my thing with the deck is, like, the four ofs make me suspect that even though it looks clean, that the deck isn't tuned. Like, I have a hard time believing that just all of these four ofs is correct. But sure. At the same time, it might just be correct. Like, this might just be the correct way to build this deck. But I don't know. This seems like the type of shell that is very good and could get there. So, to me, I'm interested. I want to see how this deck evolves, but I think this is a player in Modern now.
Okay.
Like, it used to be that those decks were easy to beat with just, like, a couple Lightning Bolts and Paths on, like, the combo creatures. And now it's, like, right. Between Bloodbraid, Jace, and, you know, Kitchen Finks, Eternal Witness, just all of them, it's like, yeah, I don't think you're beating that deck with a pile of removal. You need to kind of get under it or go way over the top with, like, Oblivion Stone or something.
Or play Rakdos Charm.
That would also work, yeah.
I'm not too proud to play that because...
Well, it's a great card.
Because they don't have any counter spells. Like, that's... Actually, I guess that would be my criticism of this deck is anything that answers, like, infinity creatures, and there are a ton of them, or, like, you know, Abrupt Decay.
It also looks like this deck literally has no way to kill the card Torpor Orb. Seems kind of absurd to me. I don't know that it could ever beat Torpor Orb. So, right. I guess you are just on the Jace plan. Like, you're going to start plus in Jace, I guess.
But, right. So, it's weird, like, because I think it's a glass cannon, but it doesn't look like it. Like, it's a glass cannon with a very long
face. Well, it also has a very, very resilient plan B of, like, terrible beatdown, but, like, very, sure, very value-centric, where, like, I think that is relevant. Like, you can get there with, like, if they aren't clocking you and they just have infinite answers, like, I think you're going to win. Like, your Coiling Oracles, your Saheeli plus, you know, deal the damage and scry, your Eternal Witness, 2-1 beats, like, you're going to get there. It's just going to take 40 turns or whatever.
Sure. So I guess I'll keep an eye on it because... You know, if I hated losing to Twin before, let me tell you, I hate losing to Felidar Guardian. Let's see. Okay. Scapeshift. This one was very interesting, and I've seen two sort of, like, evolved Scapeshift lists. One of them, which I would argue is probably, better against more decks, is like a rug version that kind of goes back towards the counterspell version. Like, I don't think they run Cryptic Command. I don't know if they're there, but they definitely run counter spells, and they also run Jace just as like an insurance policy. So,
actually,
and also, find some combo pieces.
I was gonna say, I played that deck. I tried it with one of my friends, and we thought that deck was really bad. It looked great. It sounded really good on paper. But then when you actually played with it, it was just like clunky. Jace didn't help in the way you wanted it to. It slowed the deck down, and Valakut has never been a deck that was interested in going slow. Like, you're playing a lot of mana acceleration. Like, kind of just want to get your seven lands in play and kill them.
Sure. So to that end, Thineguyen, Thineguyen, 5-0, 4 Bloodbraid, 4 Primetime, 4 Tribelder, 3 Farseek, 2 Growth Spasm. We'll come back to that. 4 Scapeshift, 4 Search for Tomorrow, 2 Slagstorm, we'll come back to that too. 4 Bolts, 2 Summoners Pact, 27 lands, as you would expect. Ancient Grudge, Fracturing Gust, Baloth, Roast, Anchor, Cage, Grafdigger's Cage, interesting. Rexage, and Tireless Tracker. So the oddballs here, Growth Spasm is a rampant growth that also gives you an Eldrazi Scion. No, the 0/1. Eldrazi Spawn. It gives you the 0/1 that you can sack. And Slagstorm is one red, choose one. Slagstorm deals 3 damage to each creature or deals 3 damage to each player. Currently kills Planeswalkers. Asterisk.
It will not with the Dominaria rule change. Yep.
It will not. Yeah, it will not with the rule change.
So that's a card you probably see updated in this list. Like, I think once that rule goes away, Slagstorm is just pretty bad.
Yeah, it goes back to being a Sweltering Suns, which is legit. Fine. I mean, I don't have any problems with it.
Anger of the Gods, even. It's a relevant card.
Anger, yeah, sure. Anger's great. But this is, right, just provides more value for a deck that was lacking in value. Well,
I think Bloodbraid Elf is great in this deck, in the sense that, like, one of the problems was Scapeshift outside of the card Primeval Titan exactly had no way to, like, accumulate resources very well. Like, it could ramp, but, like, it had a very hard time recovering from mulligans, where it's like, if you ever mulliganed to 5 with Scapeshift, it felt like you had no chance. It just didn't have card draw in the deck, essentially. And now between Tireless Tracker and Bloodbraid Elf, you have a ton of card draw in this deck. You are much better at beating the grindy Jundi type decks. And then you get a proactive plan where it's like, you know, I think this is a common thing people see a lot in Modern, or at least think about a lot when they play Scapeshift, is like, oh, you know, I'm just going to fetch one time. I'll be at 19. It like essentially time walks them because I need to get to 8 lands instead of 7 to kill you. And that is relevant, but once you put Bloodbraid in the equation, that's just out the door. It's like, now, like, that's never going to happen. They're going to be able to deal that 3 damage to you. It's always going to kill you on turn 7, but it also accelerates. So it's like, you know, it's, I get to start getting on board. I get a chump blocker when I need it. I get to pressure you when I need it. You know, it makes the deck better against counter spells, which the red-green version was weak to sometimes, so I think this is a great home for Bloodbraid. Just another shell where it's just a perfect fit.
Yeah. Well, and it's most of the time it is going to get you a land.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you're going to Bloodbraid into Farseek. You're going to Bloodbraid into,
I mean, outside Search, of Slagstorm and Lightning Bolt, I guess Summoner's Pact, it can only hit lands, which is what the deck wants. It's just a 4 mana ramp spell that gives you a 3/2.
Yep. So if you were already interested in that particular product, then Bloodbraid Elf is something that you were looking for. And the cut, it looks like, was they cut a couple Summoner's Pact, which I agree with, honestly. Like, I never liked playing 4 Summoner's Pact in the deck. But, like, I guess if you're all in on Primetime.
Some of the lists had Hour of Promise going. They're not really, this one's not playing it. Also, none of the enchantment that turns every land into all lands.
Yeah.
There's mana going, yep, that's out of there, but.
But that's, yeah, like, this is less, I guess game one, it's still all in, but you've got a chance if you can't combo off. Whereas, like, previously, if you didn't just naturally draw like a Primeval Titan or have a Summoner's Pact, then kind of
in the other shape. Thing too is just if you the plan combo. B here is very good, where it's like maybe they counter all your Scapeships and Prime Times, but between Bloodbraid hitting lands and Valak hit, like you're gonna be able to do enough damage that you kill them pretty easily. So like before, the plan B was just like it took forever. Like you would generally beat blue decks by just playing your mountains, but it just took so long. And now it's just like, well, Bloodbraid Elf plus Valakut triggers, that'll get there.
Yes. All right. So speaking of Little Kid Abzan, the Frog 2, 5-0'd with this masterpiece. It's basically Big Zoo. So 4 Knight of the Reliquary, 4 Loxodon Smiter, 4 Hierarch, 3 Renegade Rallier, 2 Scavenging Ooze, 2 Selfless Spirit, 4 Voice of Resurgence, 4 Wild Nacatl, 4 Bolts, 2 Helix, and 4 Bloodbraid Elf, 23 lands with, Horizon Canopies and Kessig Wolf Runs and, all that good stuff. Sideboard, standard stuff. Blood Moon, Gaddock Teague, Kitaki, Cage, another Cage. A lot of Gravediggers Cage. More than I've seen recently. Fire Justice and Ancient Grudge. Ancient Grudge is so good right now because it is very, very strong against Hollow One.
It's good against Hollow One. It's good against Lantern. It's good against Affinity. It's fine against Tron.
Yeah, so I'm in the market for Ancient Grudges right now, but yeah, so this is a deck that is designed to go up against Jund and Hollow One specifically, and it is aggressive enough that if you're going like turn two Loxodon Smiter, like that's a real clock.
I mean, this looks great against Tron too. Honestly, like you're fast enough, you can get under them. You have Knight of the Reliquary that can get a Ghost Quarter to slow them down if you need to. You've got Blood Moons. Like, this deck looks good.
The only thing that I think I would put in here is probably like one Sigiri Step.
I could see that.
Because like Sigiri Step off of Knight of the Reliquary is like a mega blowout and also just like good utility, and like as a one of, like occasionally you'll have it in your opening hand, but most of the time you're gonna be able to tutor it when you need it.
I mean, you can also get your guys through, like if you need to just like push through 4 points of damage, you can, you know, say Jerry Step a Loxodon on Smiter pro whatever their creature is and attack.
And like I said, this deck is very straightforward.
It's Zoo, like, yeah, it's Big Zoo. It's Zoo. Some Bloodbraid tricks, but it's, you know, it's always been a good deck in Modern. And I honestly, like, one thing I want to advocate that people, I think, need to start doing is Burn is just always going to be a popular deck in Modern, and some people are just always going to play Burn, and that's fine. Like, if you like Burn, go ahead, play Burn. But I think with, like, the consensus now that Collective Brutality is the way to beat Burn, and just all of these Brutalities everywhere, that it might be time for Burn to move back to Nacatl. Maybe play more zoo-esque elements. You know, you can get some Curd Apes in there. Go a little bigger. Ugh. But I like having these cards against Collective Brutality, being a little bigger.
Yes. Yeah. I I don't know if Curd Ape is the
No, you don't need to Curd Ape necessarily, but
an extended discussion in which somebody I know on Twitter, by the way, extended discussion with somebody I know was giving me a hard time because I suggested that that Curd Ape and Loam Lion were not Modern playable cards, which I do not believe they are. Instead, we have Narnim Renegade and literally any other one drop. Like there's so many, you know, because there was a Zoo deck. And I was like, this deck would be great. There's 8 cards that I immediately want to replace with good cards. And it turned into a whole thing. Celso, I am looking at you.
That's fair. All right, let's move on. You can play Zoo, but you can play Burn, but you can also play Elves.
You can also play Elves. Man, this deck. Okay. Some people are playing Bloodbraid Elf and Collected Company together, which I think is...
I mean, great. They are a natural pair, right?
That is right. So like I'm on board, 100% on board. I think if you are playing elves right now and you are playing Bloodbraid Elf and you are not playing four Shaman of the Pack, I believe that is wrong. The literal only deck that you, that doesn't just like automatically win you the game is Bogles. If they have a Leyline of Sanctity in play.
Yeah.
Everybody else, you're pretty much just going to kill them. And if the first one doesn't get them, the second one definitely will.
No, I mean, I think that's totally valid. This deck has a ton of ways to make mana. I honestly would like to see Unclaimed Territory sneak into these lists. Like, this guy's playing Guiltleaf Palace, and I get it, like... You want to make green, but like all of your elves already make green. So like getting green mana is not too hard. Like, sure.
Well, it's not the green. It's the black.
Yeah, you need black, but I mean, for the black cards in the deck, like the only black card in the deck that it casts is Thoughtseize, I guess, which is relevant. But I don't know. I don't think you need Thoughtseize necessarily. Like if I'm playing elves, like I want to just make my mana great, because I know elves has always been in this weird spot where you're playing so few lands that the lands you play the mana can be sketchy. And once you're playing Shaman of the Pack and Bloodbraid Elf, like I kind of just want to play Unclaimed Territory, like four Unclaimed Territory, four Cavern of Souls, and then use your other lands to be, you know, forests, Overgrown Tombs, and fetches or whatever.
Sure. So I do also want to talk about the Thoughtseize in the sideboard. So the sideboard so the deck is four Bloodbraid, four Dwinden's Elite, four Archdruid, one Elvish Champion, which I also think is conditionally very strong right now, just because there's so much Jund, there's going to be a lot of forests around, sure. Four Mystics, two Azuris, one Gnarlroot Trapper, which I really like. It's the black mana dork that taps for green, and also gives an elf death touch, which is not relevant. Heritage Druid, Land of War Elves, Nettle Sentinel, four Shaman of the Pack. Lead the Stampede is often like a draw four, at least sometimes a draw five, which is insane. So definitely play that for Coco. 19 lands. Guiltleaf Palace, I want to talk about in sort of terms like this is the lead into like me playing goblins right now. Because a lot of the principles of this elf deck, which I feel is very strong, are also at play in that goblins deck. So this plays for Guiltleaf Palace. For people who aren't familiar, in Lorwyn, there was a cycle of tribal lands, basically, where it's a dual land. In this case, in elves, it was green-black. In goblins, it's black-red. Merfolk is blue, white, and I think there was another one that I'm forgetting. Oh, there's a Kithkin one. There's also a
fairies one. There's blue, black.
Oh, there's, I'm sorry. There's a fairies one. So anyways, the having just like a free dual land, because especially in this deck and also in goblins, the density of one drops often means that you get to lead on that land. It comes into play untapped because you just, the restriction for it coming into play untapped is that you reveal a card of that type from your hand. If you just reveal the one drop that you're about to play, everything is fine, right? Like you go Guiltleaf Palace, reveal Land of War Elves, tap it, play Land of War Elves. You haven't given away any information that they weren't going to have anyways. You get a free untapped tool and it's totally painless. And that is great.
Yeah. I think the card's great. I'm in for it.
The sideboard is two Lead the Stampede, one Evolutionary Leap, one Rexage, a Choke, two Fracturing Gust, four Relics, and four Thoughtseize. it is tough out there for non-interactive linear aggro decks. You are going to be facing off against a lot of decks that are just so removal heavy that one drop, two drop, three drop is the easiest thing in the world to interact with. And it's not like it was. You know, there was a time when linear aggro decks, and this is like the complaint that people used to have with Modern, and whether or not it was valid is up for debate, but linear aggro used to be very defensible choice, right? Like you just spit out your hand, hope that they don't have, you know, a bunch of fatal pushes. So like fatal push helped, but now with there being so many more decks that are playing like fatal push, terminate.
Well, it's also like cheap value cards that like take over the game, like Jason Bloodbraid, right? It's like they, you don't have to get to like 10 mana in a cast Sphinx's Revelation anymore. You can just play your Bloodbraid on 4 and like if they went, you know, 1 drop, 2 drop, 3 drop, your Bloodbraid Charlie trades with their like 2 or 3 drop and then whatever it cascades into trades with their whatever other thing they had, and now all of a sudden they cast one card and they're at parity with like everything that you've done so far.
Yeah. Because when I started out, the original Goblins list, right, is just like a Blitz, but it's creatures that they require the density of Goblins to kind of like do what it wants to do. And Elves is the same way. And sometimes that's good enough game one, but let me tell you, game two, it is probably not. And so you got to be smart about how you interact game two, game three. And for decks that have access to black, which conveniently Elves and Goblins both do, adding discard out of the side helps offset that increased interaction in the format in general. The Goblins list that I'm running right now is started out with 4 Duress and 2 Thoughtseize in the main. And that split surprisingly felt really good to me. Like I know that IOK was and is a very good spell. In these kinds of decks, the things that you care about all get hit by duress.
Yeah.
And that goes all the way up. So there's occasionally going to be creatures that you can't deal with. More often there's going to be spells that you can't deal with, and you know, just ripping it out with a duress is something that I highly recommend.
Well, I love Thoughtseize right now. I think you made a great point where it's like these decks, especially these linear aggro decks, it's like it used to be enough to just kind of do your thing and just kill them. Now it's like you kind of need to take that Supreme Verdict out of their hand, or you kind of need to take that Liliana of the Veil or Lily Last Hope or whatever hate card they brought in. Like maybe you're playing Dredge, like having a sideboard Thoughtseize can mean the difference between getting Anger of the Guided or not getting Anger of the Guided, you know?
Right. So the, what used to be mono red goblins turned into black red goblins. And then briefly turned into Jund goblins because, I was splashing for Destructive Revelry, Ancient Grudge, and, something else, Fire Spouts, I think. But I believe it is probably going to end up to be Mardu Goblins, because I still get Wear Tear. I have analogs for all of those cards and also cards that answer Bloodbraid Elf in a more meaningful way. Like I could play Rule of Law in this deck and not get punished for it because a single Bushwhacker essentially casts 2 spells for free. Sure. So I don't need to cast more than one spell, but I can rip all the value off of your Bloodbraid Elf.
Sure.
You know, because like you wouldn't play a 4-mana 3/2 haste. That card would see 0 play.
I think that card exists. There's a colorless 4-mana 3/2 haste that also has flying. Nobody plays that.
Is there really?
Snare Thopter. Sure. So that is not a modern card. It sees no play. Better than Blood Red Elf without the Cascade part.
Sure. I don't think that's the answer. I wouldn't replace my Blood Red Elves with that post board expecting Rule of Law.
Probably not. No.
No. But once I started digging into the sort of Goblin card pool a little more, there's a lot of really, really, really good cards. Like, you can play Blood Moon in the main deck, and you have Goblin King, and Goblin King and Elvish Champion do the same thing. Goblin King is one red, red. Other goblins get plus one, and have Mountain Walk. Elvish Champion is one green, green. Other elves get plus one, have Forest Walk. The only thing of it is you can much more reliably make sure that your opponent has mountains. If they're not already playing Jund, which they probably are, if they aren't, you can drop a Blood Moon. The decks that are soft to Blood Moon, you already kind of like get a free roll against. And then like Goblin King making one pile driver and a couple of goblin tokens unblockable is auto win. Like, you just pile driver gets out of control so quickly. It's a must kill with land walk.
You can get them.
I toyed briefly with the Harbinger. I don't remember if it's Goblin Harbinger or Bogart Harbinger. But it's basically it's a worse goblin matron. It's you search for a goblin card and put it on top of your library. Goblin Matron puts it in your hand. But Goblin Matron is like Urza Block old stuff. I do wish they would bring it back though. Like, Goblin Matron is really good. But because of Tribal, it does let you tutor Tarfire, and there's a bunch of tribal goblin stuff. So it lets you tutor all of those, which is like an interesting toolbox. You get Terminate, you get Dreadbore, and so I've been very excited about goblins recently. There's also like a lot of like Prowl is a really neat mechanic that doesn't see a lot of play, but together with Goblin King making things unblockable, Prowl is basically an alternate cost mechanic that triggers if you deal damage with a rogue or a goblin, depending on what it is. There's already like there's a 2-mana cost reducer for goblins, and sure, Snap Peas. What was I gonna say? I saw the Dieter Lizzy art for Goblin Matron, and it totally sidetracked me. But goblins is a very deep tribe, and the card that I'm thinking of, Earwig Squad. Earwig Squad is 3BB for a 5/3. Not great, but it has Prowl, 2BB. You may cast this card for its Prowl cost if you dealt damage to a player this turn with a goblin or rogue. And you may not know this, many goblins are also rogues. It's a very common creature type overlap. And if it gets put into play with its Prowl cost, you basically Sadistic Sacrament your opponent. You search their library for 3 cards and exile them.
It's an anti-Velika tech, dude.
It's like anti everything tech, right? Like there are plenty of decks where if you take out like the 3 cards that they need to win the game, they just lose.
Yeah, I mean, you can just destroy Ad Nauseam too, probably, right? What was it?
Yeah. I'll take your
take your Lightning Storm and the Lab Maniac. Good luck.
Yep. Yeah. Have fun. So like I'm playing one of Earwig Squad in the side. This is actually like Legacy Goblins tech. I found out I was streaming this and somebody popped in and they were like, oh man, Earwig Squad. That's like Legacy Goblins kind of stuff. Cause obviously there's tons of stuff in Legacy where, you know, you take their tendrils and they just lose.
Sure.
So I just, I'm really, really into goblins. I have a lot of affection for the tribe. But the aunties hovel, their tribal dual land has just been consistently overperforming for me. So, if you like the goblins, I'm pretty in on them right now. Highly recommend. If you like playing creature based strategies and you don't like elves, goblins has a lot of the same feel, but also with more like you play collateral damage. I actually ended up cutting Goblin Grenade, which is something I never thought I would do. Cause it's just too slow. Like the 5 damage for 1 mana is great. But like sorcery speed functionally makes it like a non-card.
Sure. That's fair. All right. Well, let's, I think that's enough goblins for now. Let's get back to this elf list. Let's wrap this up. I think we've had a pretty long conversation here on Bloodbraid Elf, but one thing I wanted to point out, no Court of Calling in the elf list.
It's a
horrible hit off Bloodbraid Elf, right? So,
yeah.
So we're leaving the Stampede now. That's what we're moving towards. And yes. That's a common thing you're going to see with Bloodbraid Elf. A lot of threes, a lot of things that have like fake 3 mana costs, like Court of Calling, Sphinx's Revelation, stuff like that. You don't play them anymore. So, but yeah.
Interesting. It certainly had an impact on the texture of the format that I was not
expecting. Oh man, I'm with you, man. Bloodbraid Elf is just, it is way better than I thought it was. The Cascade is, I mean, you know, you thought it was good, you thought it was value, but the fact that they get to cast the spell while Bloodbraid Elf is on the stack is very underrated. It's like, if they hit a Thoughtseize off of it, it seems like it's going to be bad, but you can take the bolt out of their hand before they can bolt the Bloodbraid, so it's a great card.
Yes. I'm still in on like Bloodbraid into Smallpox. Sure. I have not been able to build it yet.
Make it happen.
But it could happen, and I feel like it's gonna be very good. So let's put a bow on it. Do you have any decks in progress or any parting shots before we
Well, I have been working on my friend with a Sultai Jace deck. I know we said we weren't going to talk about Jace, so we'll probably save that for the next episode. But let it be known, we've got a Sultai Jace deck coming out. It's probably what my modern player is going to be playing at SCG. I think it's Cincinnati in 2 weeks. I'm likely playing Legacy. I've been working on some Legacy for the past 3 weeks because we needed a Legacy player, so I kind of bit the bullet. Didn't really want to play the format, but I'm in on it, so I'm playing some Legacy.
All right, so Belcher.
No, I'm playing. I want to punish all these people playing these non-basics decks. I'm playing a back-to-basics deck. So.
Oh,
right. I'm having a lot of fun with it personally. I get to sit here, untap all of my lands. Oh no, none of your lands untap. Oh, that's unfortunate.
Blue white hate bears.
It's actually what it is. It's a blue white hate bear deck with back-to-basics in it.
Yeah.
But my only hate bear is Snapcaster Mage and Stoneforge Mystic. But Snapcaster Mage is the best hate bear ever printed, so whatever.
Yeah, sure.
It either counters your spells or exiles your creatures.
It hates your non-value. So before we get to the spice rack, you can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/turn1thoughtseize, all spelled out. You can follow me on Twitter, @T1thoughtseize, or Zach is @A22EN. You can watch me stream at twitch.tv/T1thoughtseize, sponsored by our friends at Card Hoarder. You can see our YouTube videos at youtube.com/turn1thoughtseize, all spelled out. You can read my columns at blog.cardkingdom.com. So please definitely check that out. You can see all of our content at turn1thoughtseize.com. And if you are listening on iTunes, please drop us a review because it helps our visibility in the search. I did want to give a quick shout out to Reddit user Magic8Sun for pumping the show on the 8Rack subreddit. it was much appreciated. Had some people come out. I was playing blue black 8-rack, so I had some friends from the 8-rack Discord come out, and also some people from the 8-rack subreddit, which was great to see. I love, obviously, the rack folk to come out. The Spicer Rack card, given our sort of late cast theme of goblins, is in fact Warren Weirding, which is in and of itself a pretty weird card.
I mean, I'm with you, man. It's a strange card. You don't see stuff like this in Modern generally.
Yeah, so it's one and a black for a tribal sorcery goblin. So relevant, has the goblin creature type, or has the goblin card type, so you can reveal it to Auntie's Hovel to have it come in untapped. You can tutor it with Harbinger, and there's some other sort of specialized things that involve goblin cards that this interacts with favorably. The text is, target player sacrifices a creature, already strong. And if a goblin is sacrificed this way, that player creates 2/1/1 black goblin rogue creature tokens, and those tokens gain haste until the end of turn. I have found this card to have a lot of utility. Basically, like, not a lot of other people on the other side of the table are going to be playing goblins where the downside of the edict is going to, like, really impact you. So having a main deck edict, and I'm running three of these in the main right now. Having a main deck edict against any of the big creature strategies is great. You can use it early on. I played against a bunch of decks that were like Noble Hierarch decks, where like, if you're on the play, you go like whatever land Goblin Guide, and they go, you know, like land Noble Hierarch, you can then go land Warren Weirding, get rid of their Hierarch, which interrupts their, like, it disrupts their curve, get in for another two, and then go from there. It just, like, gives you that board advantage that I think is missing in a lot of these aggro decks. Also, like, you know, killing a Thought Knot Seer with this is great. Killing, you know, Reality Smasher, Ulamog, like, there's ridiculous stuff that you can kill with this very unassuming card. And also, like, if you just need to go wider, you can turn one token that doesn't have haste into two tokens that do have haste, and then also, like, trigger Surge for Goblin Bushwhacker, which just, like, is an extra free, like, 2 points of damage.
Yeah, absolutely. Plays well with Goblin Bushwhacker.
It's such a cool card. Also, the art,
the art is sweet. Like, one thing these red decks have struggled with for a long time is, like, big toughness creatures. So, like, the fact that, like, you have a way to, like, not get completely destroyed by Reality Smasher is super relevant.
Yep. I mean, it has felt best against, like, Gurmag Angler. You know, like, that is something that this deck definitely
helps
with.
Against just the entire Death Shadow deck too.
Yes. Yeah. Death Shadow. Like, I mean, you have, like I said, you have Terminate. Like, one of the valuable things about the Black Splash is getting access to Terminate and Dreadbore. But there's only so many of those things that you can main deck. And occasionally, just like, if you go up against a creatureless control deck, or,
yeah, the fact that you can turn into a 1/1. You have to sack something else to get there, right? So it's like adding a 1/1, but sure. I mean, that's enough generally, like, to against control decks. A lot of times the way control decks win is they make you have just dead removal in your hand. So
So go grab some Warren Weirdings. Like I said, it's such a neat card. And then also it plays interestingly with there's a 2-mana cost reducer called Frog Tosser Banneret, which was another tribal cycle from Lorwyn. It reduces the cost of goblin spells. And since this is a goblin spell, you then get a 1-mana edict or a 1-mana, like, token generator.
That's strong. Like, this card is, yeah, this card isn't necessarily playable at 2-mana. This card would be played in a lot of decks at one.
Yes. Yep. So it's something to consider. So this card is for me a slam dunk. Great art, great utility. Fits in a fun deck that I'm playing right now. So I love me some Warren Weirding.
Yeah.
But that's what we've got for right now. And thank you so much for listening. We will talk to you next time.
See you guys.